animals. It's hard to resist them. They're so cute and loving that you just can't help but want more. So if you want to have a multi-pet household, go ahead, but make sure you're ready for it. Trainer Bob Ryder of Positive Transformation says there are several potential problems you can come up against in a multi-pet household.
The first of which is finding that the amount of time it takes to give good care to any one animal is often more than people think it will be before they get the pet. And I think that multiplies exponentially for each pet that you add to the household. In other words, having two cats or two dogs or one of each is more than twice as much work as having one. It's not only the amount of time that you have to give to each individual relationship, you also have to pay attention to the relationship between the animals. So if there's two, there's the relationship between animal A and animal B. If there's three, there's the relationship between animal A and animal B, between animal A and animal C,
between animal B and animal C,
and between the owner and all combinations of those.
Wow, so that's complicated geometry.
It adds up fast.
It does, and it costs a lot more, actually, to have a lot of pets, too.
Yeah, financially, that's another consideration. There's veterinary care. There's providing good nutrition, not just the cheapest brand that you can find, but something that's biologically appropriate to each species. So it adds up fast.
What are some ways that we can introduce pets to each other that can guarantee or at least help make a good relationship that's lasting rather than just, you know, throwing them all in the room and saying, okay, everybody, it's
good luck.
Every animal for itself.
Right. Yeah, that's such a good question. There are several things that we can do to maximize the chances for success. The first is to acquire your household pet population gradually, if possible. But to the extent that you do, acquiring one pet and establishing your bond and your relationship with that pet, doing whatever training is necessary and socializing that animal, and then have a plan for when you bring in another animal.
All right. What's that plan? What should you do?
Well, I would create some space for, let's say we're talking about bringing in, you already have a dog, and let's say we're going to bring a cat into the house. Before I even bring the cat in, I would start making whatever changes are going to have to happen for the dog in advance so the dog doesn't associate the loss of some freedom, let's say, or having a little less time with the arrival of the cat. I might confine the dog to a certain portion of the house instead of letting it have free range if that's been the case beforehand. When I bring the cat in, I would create a dog-free zone, let the cat have the choice of whether it wants to be around where the dog is or retreat to another room where it's safe.
So it has a cat version of a man cave.
Yeah, it has a man-cat cave.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
So it has a place where it can go and it can feel safe.
Right. And then when the time is right, you know, when I have time to pay attention and choreograph activities, I would bring the cat out to a portion of the home where the dog is present but doesn't necessarily have access to the cat. I might have the dog on a tether or confined in an exercise pen. And then I would do some bonding with the cat, some grooming, let the cat eat nearby where the dog is within view, but obviously to the cat it would be safe and not be prone to being harassed. And I would do some training with the dog, teaching the dog that just because the cat is around doesn't mean that that's the only thing going on in the room. You can still pay attention to me, still respond to my signals if I want you to lie down or look at the cat or not look at the cat. I would do that all gradually. And like I said, to the extent that you have the choice to do that gradually, do it according to a plan rather than just throwing all the animals together and hoping for the best.
Well, different animals have different ideas about, say, for example, hierarchy. Dogs live in packs, but cats tend to hunt alone. They're bringing all this baggage with them about who is the top animal and why that animal is the top animal. Do we see a lot of friction between species about communication of who's on top, who's on the bottom, what sort of animal hierarchy we have in the household?
Yeah, another great question. There's lots of controversy and a wide variety of opinions about how much and how animals might process a sense of rank within a social system. In dogs, it's a lot less than what people have been led to believe by
really?
Supposed experts.
Uh-huh.
Hierarchy tends to be, to the extent that it exists, it tends to be very fluid and dependent on context, dependent on the animals involved. dependent on what the resource is that they might be grappling for. One dog might be very possessive about the attention of their owner, but not care who gets to play with the tennis ball, and vice versa. And another great part of the question is, what are the different species' needs in terms of just social contact or privacy?
Mm-hmm.
Cats do tend to need a lot more private time than many, not all, but many dogs. So paying attention to the particular needs of the species and the breed makes a lot of sense too. Not all dogs are as sociable or inclined to want a lot of contact as other breeds. Great Pyrenees, for example, are bred to spend lots of time alone out taking care of flocks of sheep, and lots of human companionship might not only be unnecessary, it might be more stressful for them.
Well, what about dealing with something like the prey drive instinct? Mm-hmm. With regards to, say, you've got a cat and you've got a bird. We had this situation once when I was growing up. We had a canary named Atticus, and we had a cat named Dante. And it was one of these sort of Tweety Bird Sylvester situations where Dante was really interested in getting to Atticus. And one day he did. That was the end of Atticus, sadly, because he got out of his cage. And, of course, Dante's prey drive, he went after that bird like a shot. Is there anything we could do to distract a cat if we've got a cat and a bird? How do we make sure they get along better than Sylvester and Tweety?
Well, probably just knowing that there's certain limits on what we can teach or ingrain into animals with habit or with training makes a lot of sense. The amount of work and thought and effort it would take to get any cat to be reliably safe if given access to a bird.
Don't even bother.
It would be beyond the abilities or interests of most animal owners. I'm not even sure that it's possible, but if it were, it would be much simpler and much more effective just to keep the cat and the bird carefully separated, and knowing that, you know, nature has created this relationship between the two to make for a very dangerous situation for the bird. You'd want to just know that that's the case and make sure the cat never gets access as best you can.
It's not just how do we get the pets to get along. It's about how do we as their pet owners view them as species and how they will potentially or potentially not get along, and make sure that they have a lifestyle that will be healthy for all of them. And that might mean making sure their paths never cross.
Quite right. Yeah, it's our job as the owner for the animals in the house, or the, you know, the benign or the benevolent caregiver, to look to the needs for their safety and their well-being and their psychological needs and so forth, knowing that they have limitations about how much they can learn and what their behavioral repertoire is. We have to do a lot for them just in terms of limiting access to different spaces and times and the comings and goings in different rooms.
Bob, what are the benefits of multi-pet households?
Well, the joy that they can bring to their owners when it's done thoughtfully and systematically, being able to enjoy the different behaviors and relationships that you can have with different animals, many people find to be a real joy. And more often than I would have thought possible, finding animals that have a capacity for a relationship that wasn't obvious at first can be a delightful surprise. One of my colleagues wrote me about a dog that she had when she was a child, but it lived with her family on a farm, and they had some ducks, and every night the dog just showed an interest in the ducks and started herding the ducks back into the enclosure without even being trained to do it. That was just a nice, delightful surprise to find out that
it lots brought of something out in him.
Yeah, lots of animals just have a great capacity for enjoying other species that might not be obvious. I'm friends with a trainer in New York City who raises puppies and rats who perform together in a Broadway play. It's her job to get the puppies and the rats socialized to, so that they can interact safely and do their performance. And she's had a parade of different puppies and rats because they outgrow the roles.
The
performance, and they're adopted out to good homes.
Uh-huh.
But interspecies relationships can be another real joy to see take place if it's done carefully and thoughtfully.
That's Bob Ryder from Positive Transformations. For additional advice on helping your pets get along, he recommends the American Veterinary Society on Animal Behavior. And to keep your multi-pet household happy, search environmental enrichment for each species to provide specific activities for every animal to remain engaged and happy. And if you're looking to add a furry pal to your household, consider Hermione, the Animal House Pet of the Week. Hermione is a 7-year-old beagle mix who thrives on attention. Sweet-natured and easygoing, Hermione is an expert on the human-canine bond and loves to hang out with humans. Both potty-trained and crate-trained, this smart girl is willing to do what it takes to find the perfect forever home. You can find Hermione at Wishbone Canine Rescue in Bloomington. I'm Laura Kennedy.